Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with John O'Bacon and Leo Laporte, episode 75 for June 27th, 2009, Open Solaris. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, libre, and open source software. With me, Randall Schwartz is the day off. Where is Randall, John? John O'Bacon is here, thankfully.
I don't know. He's off cavorting somewhere around the west coast of America. We don't know. He's kind of sloped into the shadows and said, could you hold the fort? So we hope he's going to come back at some point. I imagine he'll probably be back next week. So.
Some accident with a contraceptive and a karaoke machine, and we've lost him for life. I don't know what's going on.
Happens all the time for all of us.
But we have a great show, and I'm really glad you're here, Jono, to ask the tough questions. Jono, as you know, we've mentioned it before, Jono is the community manager for Ubuntu. But a writer, a raconteur, a podcaster. He did Lug Radio for a long time and a regular now on Floss Weekly, which is great. We're so glad to have that. And today we're going to talk about not Linux. Can you handle that?
I'm ready to rock. We've got a wonderful, wonderful guest today.
Well, introduce him to us.
Okay, so so today we're going to have a chap called Glyn Foster who's going to be on the show. And Glyn is the product manager for Open Solaris and is working over at Sun, an Irishman living in New Zealand. So, he's going to be a great person to join us today.
Well, let's say hello to from New Zealand, Glyn Foster. Glyn, it's great to have you on the show.
Hey there, it's great to be here.
So let's talk about Solaris first and the genesis of Solaris. This was a proprietary operating system under Sun initially, right?
That's right. obviously had a pretty long and illustrious career, and certainly in the enterprise and sort of big mainframe systems. And, you know, I think Sun sort of made the pragmatic approach of open sourcing the software in June 2005. So we launched a community project at opensolaris.org and essentially pushed all the source code that sort of makes up Solaris. And a lot of that source code is already free and available on other communities, just, you know, GNOME and Firefox and OpenOffice and stuff like that. But some of the kernel stack within Open Solaris, we open source the source code. So that was pretty cool.
Is it a fork, or is it now the main development line?
No, it's absolutely the main development point. All active development now happens out in opensolaris.org. Obviously, we still have discussions with third-party vendors, and some of them prefer to do some of their development code in private. But for pretty much all the source code, the projects out in Sun are now being hosted on opensolaris.org. And so you can catch the latest development, the latest innovations, whatever's happening there, you'll see it there first.
It seems like a stunning project, and it's a very large project. When I first heard about Open Solaris, with Solaris being open sourced, can you give us an idea of the size and the scope of how much code was open sourced and all the rest of it?
Yeah, I mean it's huge. It's about 35,000 files, individual files, over 10 million lines of code. That was what was released back in June. So obviously, that was 3 years ago. We've just had a third birthday, and there'll be a staggering amount of source code now that has been rewritten since then or added since then. We've got about, the structure in opensolaris.org is divided into several different sub-communities. So you've got sub-communities for dtrace, ZFS, zones, power management, desktop, a whole bunch of sort of stuff like that. And within those communities, they sort of sponsor a whole bunch of different projects. So we're pretty close to about 200 projects, more or less. There's about 50 different sub-communities. And then obviously the user groups on top of that, and all of that is pretty much housed on opensolaris.org.
When Aaron Newcomb was in here, he gave us a copy of Solaris 10, He was talking about ZFS, or ZFS as you'd call it. But,
that's right.
But very impressive. I mean, really slick. Nice stuff.
Yeah, I mean, some of the innovations in Solaris, especially since Solaris 10, have just been incredible, really. I mean, they haven't traditionally been elsewhere available elsewhere until the Apple guys ported ZFS and DTrace to Mac, so and the BSD as well. So, you know, you're seeing pretty much all the results of Sun's R&D and community R&D at opensolaris.org as well.
So can you just, for those listeners who are unfamiliar with ZFS and DTrace, can you give an overview of what those two things do?
So ZFS is just a 128-bit file system. Basically, I mean, you could sort of go into a whole bunch of different features, but some of the interesting ones that I like are snapshot and rollback. So it allows you to quickly snapshot your file system, your data, take multiple snapshots at very little cost space-wise, and then at any given stage, you can just quickly roll back. You know, obviously ZFS supports RAID, and it's, you know, got sort of integrity in terms of writes and stuff like that. So
it's truly modern,
really massively scalable. Yeah.
Just incredible. You know, my greatest disappointment is that Apple has kind of pulled back on including ZFS in Snow Leopard, and they seem to have taken all the mentions of it out. So I guess now we should all just stop using OS X and go to Open Solaris.
Well, I mean, that's certainly. Certainly an option. And some of the really cool things that we'd done with Solaris 10 was, you know, introduced ZFS, and then, you know, over the course of several Solaris 10 updates, we started to allow you to boot directly from ZFS file system. Within OpenSolaris itself, ZFS is actually the default file system. So really, we're starting to leverage those features right out of the box, the snapshot and rollback, and you know, we've introduced a bunch of features there, with particularly with package management, to make administration really, really easy.
I saw the little GUI interface to how you can roll back, and it's time slider.
Yes, it's essentially like a plug-in to Nautilus, awesome. The Nautilus file system, and really, it's, you know, as soon as you enable snapshots, they'll take snapshots every minute, every hour, every day, and every week, and then sort of basically start storing them on a regular occurrence and deleting the ones that you don't need anymore, and that allows you to basically just drag a slider right the way back and sort of see changes to your files in real time. It's really, really quite neat.
So tell us about DTrace, and that's something that we hear a lot about. It's developer focused, but what is it?
Yeah, well, it's not only just developer focused. So DTrace is a dynamic tracing facility on Solaris and OpenSolaris, and essentially allows you to capture a live view of a running system completely securely and safely and stuff. So it's the type of thing that you can go into an enterprise system running this mission critical system and start using DTrace and know exactly that you're never going to bring down that system. So it allows you to see basically what files are being opened, what memory is being swapped, what functions are being executed, and a whole bunch of different things. So your typical tools like S-Trace and Trust were sort of very process-centric, and this allows you to get really the high-level view of the operating system, and you can do really, really cool things. So you can aggregate over your data as well. So you start collecting your data and then filtering it out by, you know, different sort of queries, really. And you know, the whole idea of DTrace is you ask a question, you sort of program that into DTrace, and it's like a simple command line script or a descripting language, and really sort of check the results of that question. And then if that sort of prompts you to ask another question, you can sort of dive right the way down into a series of questions until you sort of come back and try and find your answer, really. And it's not just sort of user space. So Trust is, you know, or S-Trace is sort of more user space centric. You can actually go right the way through from a web request coming into your browser, right the way down through your browser stack, right there through your user space, then through kernel, and run right back again. And that's everything, you know, applications, networking, virtualization, the entire thing. You get it for free. You don't have to do anything extra as a developer. It's really quite neat.
Now, I have a question about, obviously a question because it's an interview.
You can make a statement, but it would kind of leave us in hanging.
Well, yeah. So In terms of D-Trace, I've heard mixed things about this, because in terms of whether it could work on Linux, because some people have said, you know what, no, it would be impossible to port to Linux. But then I spoke to the guy who wrote it, and he seemed to think that it was possible to port it to Linux, and other people have said yay, and some people have said nay. You know, you're a prominent Sun dude. Can you give us some insight on whether this could actually work on Linux?
I mean, I think it could be. I think there was definitely some work being done on a Linux port, actually. I don't know how far that's gone. That was quite a year probably ago that I saw an update of that. I'm sure it would be a bit of work, but depending on how the code is structured, then it might be quite modular. And you know, certainly the BSD guys, when porting D-Trace across to that platform, found it incredibly easy, and they had a basic port pretty quickly. I think the Apple guy is probably similar. And, you know, I think a lot of the issues of really why you haven't seen a D-Trace port is probably around the licensing and the GPL and CDDL conflicts, unfortunately.
Does the CDDL, does it still exist? I mean, I thought everything was changed nowadays.
GPL v3. Still exists. It's still the predominant license for the kernel stuff. We've got obviously a bit of BSD as well, but most of the code is still CDDL. And that sort of seems to work a little bit better with a sort of an enterprise environment. It's a file-based license, so if you modify an existing file that's licensed as CDDL, then you have to release those modifications as CDDL. But if you add files on top of it, then, you know, you don't have to if you don't want to.
Gotcha.
But, you know, I think it's another license, and, you know, I'm sure, you know, in the future things may change. Who knows?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of change going on, I guess, right now with the community. Everything's growing, everything's expanding and changing in different ways. In terms of your community, I mean, you said that, you know, it's been 3 years now. I mean, I remember when the announcement first came out. How have you seen the community grow? How have you seen it change?
I think we're maturing. I think certainly nothing on this sort of size and scale of a community has ever been done before at Sun. Pretty massive project, and it's one of the more important ones within Sun, certainly. And we've sort of really wanted to keep the sort of foundations of Solaris development alive, and some of the development processes involved to create that code and preserve them out on OpenSolaris.org. But we sort of had to be a little bit more pragmatic about that sort of approach, and realize that, you know, we can't necessarily force all those sort of that massive amount of process and burden into the development, because it's, you know, it's a massive adoption barrier to anyone getting involved, and really sort of have to take the approach of trying to sort of simplify things over a course of you know, several years. And we're probably still not quite there. I mean, I think there's always stuff that we can change and make better and stuff like that. But we're definitely maturing. We're trying to sort of figure out the whole sort of corporate and community side of things as well, and sort of try and identify what barriers people continue to have who are working out sort of externally from Sun. So it's been quite a significant process that we've gone through. We've had an Open Solaris governing board for the last 3 years. They've sort of been trying to work out some of the community aspects of things, and you know it's a difficult thing to do. It's probably nothing on the sort of size that's been done before. You know, much like some of the issues that they've had in the OpenOffice.org community, we're sort of facing similar things. And you know, and most other Linux distributions are having the same thing. You know, Ubuntu has it with Canonical, Fedora has it with Red Hat. It's, you know, it's a continual fine line to walk between community and corporate, and trying to get the right balance and get both sides sort of talking to each other, really.
You said the C word. I'm sure Jono has a little experience with that.
we have no issues. Everything's perfect. <in the event. laughs> So in terms of the community stuff, I mean, you mentioned OpenOffice, and I don't want to derail this too far into OpenOffice, because you're here to talk about Open Solaris, but there's been a huge amount of criticism from many, many members of the OpenOffice community regarding Sun's stewardship of that project. You know, Sun made a very generous contribution in open sourcing StarOffice, and it became OpenOffice and all the governance around it. But there's been a lot of criticism towards Sun about that stewardship. Right. And I was kind of worried at first when Open Solaris came out that, that there'd be similar issues. How much wrangling have you had to do internally regarding making Open Solaris an openly governed and transparent project?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a significant amount. I think when you sort of see a lot of sort of grassroots open source projects starting from the outside, it's a very different sort of structure, really. So if you take the Linux kernel, that was all sort of developed outside from day one. And you know, most of the people who are contributing to that project sort of get the whole open source thing, and they've had a lot of experience in it, and it sort of comes natural. Some of the development processes sort of start from the bottom up and sort of developed over time. Within Sun, obviously, there's a significant number of people, developers and managers and stuff, that haven't done open source. They haven't had any sort of experience in dealing with external people. You know, a lot of the sort of thought you have to think about on a continuous basis is, okay, well, how do the external community think about this, and how do they get involved, and how do we change our processes to make it more sort of involving for them? And, you know, that's a continual process. You can't just solve that overnight.
Yep.
So,
and has there been a certain amount of, because Sun's a big company, I mean, has there been a certain amount of kind of selling the concept of community internally to some tie wearing pencil neck inside Sun? I mean, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that happens on a daily basis. People sort of try, you know, to sort of argue, well, what's the value of open source? And if we're just giving all or in DOA and all that sort of stuff. And really, we've had a pretty dramatic shift in Sun over the last, you know, three to 5 years, maybe, you know, with Jonathan taking the helm, and he's very sort of pro open source, and that's been a lot easier to sort of enforce an open source culture within Sun. And really, you know, Sun, if you look at it, sort of where it was founded, it came from BSD. So it is an open source company generally, and the culture inside certainly is very sort of open source centric, where there's a lot of sharing of information, and most of the mailing lists are open, and people can contribute and attend meetings that, you know, they should feel free to. So, you know, it's a continual shift, and I think we're making some pretty good ground, at least lately.
So do you feel like Jonathan Schwartz has really helped enable this? I mean, do you think he's one of the catalysts for the fact that Open Solaris even happened in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly helped. You know, I think also the rise of Linux popularity in the enterprise is probably been a lot of that sort of encouragement as well. They're sort of seeing some of the market share of Solaris and people sort of changing over from going from, you know, big high scale machine, proprietary machines, to sort of cheaper sort of white boxes and looking for alternative choices and stuff. So, you know, a lot of that has probably had quite a big influence as well. And you know, there's a lot of really great open source people inside Sun as well, and through their sort of advocacy and activism, really, you know, that's probably helped as well.
Fantastic. No, it's a pretty impressive kind of growth curve. I think everybody has got huge respect for what Open Solaris has done in the last 2 or 3 years, because it seems to, I mean, to take a product like that, which is deeply proprietary and comes from a proprietary background and often run on proprietary hardware, to open that up and to make the progress you've made is just absolutely stunning thing.
And Solaris has had traditionally huge revenues as well. So, you know, you've got to be careful. You can't just say, okay, well, you know, let's go open source and do everything open source. You still got to sort of keep the lights on with some of the revenue generation and that sort of stuff. So it's a very difficult line to walk, really, a lot of the time.
Does Sun still sell it in any way, or has all that revenue been lost?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, so Solaris 10 is currently a free download, and then you will pay typically for a service subscription. Right. And most enterprises, of course, will have some sort of support and, you know, that sort of stuff, and, you know, entitlements and whatnot.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, there's still a significant revenue from that. Obviously, if you make the operating system free, people are going to be more likely to try it out on different systems, whether it's a laptop or desktop or computer. And then, you know, when they get into the enterprise, they know how they have to scale, then there's a good chance of buying hardware. So that's sort of Sun's traditional strategy. And Open Solaris is similar as well. You know, it's a free download, and people can get us a support subscription as well.
So a lot of people are obviously drawing comparisons to Linux in terms of open source operating systems. Why didn't Sun just decide to go with Linux? I mean, there was the horrible effort that was the Java desktop thingy that kind of erupted
JDS.
In flames. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if that's still going. But the that's kind of a bad memory. But why didn't Sun just think, you know, maybe we should investigate Linux? Because it seems like there was a lot of momentum behind Linux, particularly back then. And momentum seems to have continued. And even though Sun owns Solaris, would it not have made better sense to have invested in Linux, do you think?
Well, I think you're looking at also the sort of engineering history behind Solaris and the R&D that's gone into it. Obviously, you know, Sun's probably pretty reluctant to just throw all that sort of work away. And, you know, Solaris had traditionally been this massively secure, massively scalable, massively performant operating system in the enterprise, and we still sort of see a significant demand for that. Obviously, that's not to take away from Linux efforts, and, you know, Sun is still making sure that Linux runs, you know, well on all its hardware as well. So I think there's an opportunity for both to exist, to coexist, and really to provide choice to the end user.
Yeah,
and that's diplomatic answer anyway.
It was very diplomatic. So here's a less diplomatic question: Is it officially not bollocks? I mean,
it's officially not bollocks.
No, it's pretty damn good, really. I think if you look at the latest release, we've got one of our newest innovations, and we're sort of treating it at the same sort of level as ZFS and Dtrace. There's the project called Crossbow, and essentially what it is network virtualization. So you can create a series of virtualized NICs on top of a physical one, and essentially that allows you to put resource constrictions on those virtualized NICs. So if you say, okay, well, I only want 80% of my bandwidth to go through this virtualized NIC, you can do so. And that's a sort of completes the sort of virtualization puzzle for us. So we've got, you know, containers and Solaris zones and some of the virtual XVM Zen-based virtualization. And now we've got Crossbow. And that's pretty cool, I think. I think a lot of sort of people are starting to look at that and seeing how that could be useful in the enterprise.
But it seems like you've got these really like phenomenal technologies like Dtrace and zones and ZFS and all these kinds of things. But whenever I've spoken to people about Open Solaris, a lot of people have said, you know, I tried it and it just didn't work. Like my network card didn't work, or, you know, simple stuff like booting didn't happen. When I asked my bollocks question, it was essentially, you know, can I take it, can I run it on a laptop, can I run it on a server, and it's likely to work? I mean, how much tweaking? Is it back to the old days of Linux when you needed to solder an iron to make it work? Is it?
Well, I think it was certainly like that for Solaris 10. We've come a long, long way for that, and sort of working with the likes of Intel and Dell and IBM and stuff to really provide some of the hardware drivers. I don't think we're there yet, and possibly not quite to the same level as Linux. It's still probably relatively sort of frustrating for a lot of sort of obscure laptops with some of the sort of proprietary pieces of hardware. There's no sort of open driver for that. But if you sort of take some of the Intel-based stuff, it works really well out of the box. And like a shameless plug, really. But this is, I don't know whether you can sort of see, this is the new sort of pre-installed Open Solaris Toshiba.
Oh, that's neat.
It's a Portage R600. And you know, things like the volume works and the the keys work and power management as well and wireless
the keys work.
Yeah, the, does there a Solaris key well? Instead of a Williams?
The hot keys and stuff.
Okay.
You got to have a Solaris logo to put on the Solaris key.
Yeah, we've got a nice sort of.
Oh, that's so slick.
Solaris.
Oh, that's so slick.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. So, you know, you're just sort of seeing an evolution of OpenSolaris really working on those sort of laptops and some of the netbooks and stuff. And we really want to get to a stage where things work out of the box, because that was probably the biggest frustration for Solaris. People couldn't install it. It was, you know, the install CDs were over like 5 CDs or single DVD. Then once you put it in the machine, and if it did boot, then you went through this massively confusing install procedure. And, you know, then you got to the shell, and the shell was old, and the desktop was old, and the package management stuff wasn't really sort of network-based. It didn't really work very well out of the box. And, you know, so we changed all that. We said, okay, this is obvious frustrations. We've got to fix this if people are going to come back to our platform, because people had left, really, because it was hard to use. It was hard to administer. So no matter how good the innovations were in terms of ZFS and Dtrace and containers and stuff, people wouldn't use it if it couldn't run on their laptops. So really wanted to make a change in that regard. And we've successfully done that. And now we're sort of hoping to sort of evolve from that and produce sort of 6-monthly releases and really get some of the technology out in the hands of the users.
But from some of the things that you've said, you know, the package management was old and not network based. So I'm assuming you installed from a tape drive or something. And the desktop was old and the shell was old. It sounds like essentially what happened was that OpenSolaris was a kernel, and you've had to build up all the extra stuff around the edge of it, which is what's been going on the last years with Linux. So that's why I'm curious as to why, even if it's not necessarily run on Linux, but making sure that this pre-existing technology is used to the best of the ability. Now, I know that some of it's already there with OpenSolaris. I think GNOME runs on it and things like that. But it sounds like a lot of not invented here. Am I getting it wrong?
I mean, there's probably a fair amount of not invented here. I think that's traditionally been an issue with engineering. But, you know, I think you're sort of seeing a little bit more pragmatic approach now. We're starting to really take some of the free and open source software being out there and making sure it works well on Solaris. So I think that's important to do. You know, where there's an equivalently good library out in the open source community, sure, we're going to use it. I mean, that makes sense. But we're also going to contribute back to it. We're not just going to steal the code and use it. You're seeing a shift over time. It's going to take a while, but, you know, I think that's a good thing.
Fantastic. And what's the roadmap? What can we expect to see in the next cut? Well, actually, let's start out with what's been in the most latest release. What's been the latest release of OpenSolaris that you want?
So the Project Crossbow is probably the biggest sort of thing that we introduced with the last release. So the 2009.06 is the latest release. You can get it on OpenSolaris.com. Some of the package management stuff, I sort of haven't really explained some of that. Obviously, ZFS default file system. So we've introduced a new package management system called Image Packaging System, IPS, and that's a network-based package management system written in Python. And I guess with the value of having ZFS under the hood really is allows you to snapshot and roll back your system when you do system updates.
Right.
So essentially what we do is we create a clone of your file system. We apply all those updates. So if you do a dist upgrade with apt or whatever, we've got an image update with IPS. And so you create a clone, you apply all your updates in the clone, and you can quickly to switch boot environments through grub to the new environment. And that's great, because if something doesn't work, then you can easily roll back or delete that clone or whatever and continue on working. So that's kind of neat. It's obviously network-based, much the same way as Yum and apt and stuff like that. We've got mirroring support added. We've added a new sort of MIME association for Firefox, so you can do sort of one-click downloads for packages. That's pretty neat. And sort of a myriad of other sort of changes, really just providing some of the application availability and putting stuff into the repository as well. So you can get your JIT source control system. You can get Eclipse. You know, some of these traditional, I guess, religious barriers within Sun, you know, oh, well, why aren't you using NetBeans? We've got to provide choice, because if you don't provide choice, no one's going to use it, or they're going to certainly use that as an excuse not to run it. So filling those gaps is important to us. So
great. And where do you see the roadmap? I mean, what do you see for the next release?
So, yeah, I mean, we're starting to continue on the 6-monthly release. We'll have a release early next year. Some of the big things that are going to hit for that, and Aaron talked about it in a show a couple of back, is ZFS dedupe, deduplication support, ZFS user quotas, crypto support as well. Some of those big features are going to land too. Obviously, we'll be doing an upgrade of the desktop, Firefox, OpenOffice, that sort of stuff, and continuing to sort of evolve some of the package management and install things as well.
Great. So in terms of where Solaris is, Open Solaris is moving forward, do you see it as competing with? Do you see it competing with predominantly server-based operating systems such as Red Hat and CentOS and that kind of thing, or do you see it as really a desktop? Is it something I should be expected to run on my laptop, sort of thing?
Well, I think Open Solaris generally is sort of a mixture of both. It's sort of a master of all trades, or it certainly tries to be, much like some of the other free and open source distributions out there. We obviously think that, you know, because Solaris has a massive history in the enterprise, then it's an excellent distribution and operating system to deploy your apps on. You know, we've introduced a lot of sort of features really to that would be, I guess, more interesting in the enterprise environments, so the crossbows and the virtualization stuff. We've added dtrace probes to some of the sort of web-based AMP stack stuff. That's where you're going to see the massive performance wins. I think it's equally good as a developer platform, and it's, you know, you can run it on your laptop and netbook and stuff and be fine. And really, you know, I've used Linux a lot, especially during when I was as developer in the GNOME community, and really at the end of the day now, because I'm so focused in user land stuff, I actually don't notice a difference between a Linux kernel and an Open Solaris kernel, and I think that's probably a good thing, really, in many ways for developers who don't need to care.
Yeah, I entirely agree, and. So there was a while back, I remember at an OSCON, Patrick Finch used to work at Sun, now at Mozilla, was making a lot of noise about Sun's perspective was developers living in their environment, was walking around with the development environment. Can you illuminate us on what,
what he meant?
Eating your own dog food.
Because none of us understood what the hell he was going on about.
So. I'm not sure. I mean, pretty much everyone who's working on the kernel will obviously be dog fooding the latest bits. We've got a pretty long history of really running the latest bits on some of the build servers, and you know the core mail server for a lot of the kernel engineers is the latest build. So if it breaks, then people get pretty angsty pretty quickly. So generally find you know the bugs they come out pretty quickly, and there's a really good attitude in doing that. But you know, I think from a developer point of view, using it on the desktop and being able to deploy your applications into the server environment is quite a powerful message, really. Being able to use the same environment, so rather than having to, I guess, open up a VNC session into your server, you know, being able to do stuff on the fly and move stuff across into the enterprise easily seems like a pretty useful feature to have, and sort of starting to sort of explore some of those sort of things with some of the virtualization stuff. And I think there could be some really interesting things happening there.
Sounds absolutely wonderful. So we've talked a lot about the technology, which sounds really fascinating, really interesting. What kind of hardware is it? You talked earlier on about how it's running on netbooks and laptops, that kind of thing. Traditionally, Sun operating systems work very well with Sun hardware. Is it particularly for servers, is it working better on non-Sun hardware now? Can people run it on Dells and whatever else?
Yeah, definitely. So OpenSolaris, as it stands on OpenSolaris.com, is available for x86 and Spark, obviously x64 too. Certainly done quite a lot of work, really, to make sure that that is a nice platform for both sides of the users. Some of the interesting things, actually, with OpenSolaris.org is it allows people to create different ports of the operating system to other platforms. So we saw a PowerPC port quite a while ago that sort of came out from Sun Labs as a sort of a proof of concept, really, in terms of what was possible. But also, I think IBM sponsored a company, signed nominee to do a System Z port, and that's been done. And just recently, actually in the last week, NEC did an ARM port of OpenSolaris, or sort of first stages of an ARM port. So I think you'll sort of see more sort of things like that over time. Seeing that on day one, and it's never going to happen for most open source communities, because people are going to really have a chance to root through the code and sort of figure out how things work. But over time, and really, you know, I sort of see like a traditional a shift from proprietary hardware to sort of, I guess, open source hardware, where at least the specs are open source. And you know, certainly I know in Xorg that the Intel guys are really making really amazing progress in terms of open drivers for Linux, and that's sort of happening with Solaris as well. So,
right.
You know, I think that's a shift I'd like to see more of within sort of the hardware space of basically specifications for different hardware. I think the performance should be as good as both, and we pretty regularly benchmark both sort of platforms. So I don't think you necessarily need to only choose Spark-based systems or vice versa.
Mm. And how do people get involved? I mean, it's an open project, open community. How do people get involved?
It's the same thing as most other communities out there, is trying to figure out where you sort of fit in. You've obviously got to do a little bit of navigation in terms of, well, how does the community structure? Where is this community? What does this mean? Where's the projects? You know, is my skill set a developer or documentation or user, or, you know, should I start a user group? Or am I interested in the technology? So essentially, all the development and stuff like that happens on OpenSolaris.org. I would recommend first of all to go there and sort of read a bunch of pages and sort of get a feeling. Maybe subscribe to a few mailing lists. Some of the IRC channels on Freenode. I think if you're looking for to get involved in packaging, for example, for OpenSolaris.com, and we're really sort of keen for people to get involved there, we've actually got an automated build and packaging service called SourceJuicer, and you can get to that at juicer.opensolaris.org. Yeah, so JUCR.opensolaris.org, and essentially that is a pretty neat utility, actually, because it is taking some of the sort of knowledge, I guess, from the free software world in terms of creating spec files, or RPM spec files, so like a basic sort of build recipe, essentially. And what you can do is that you can submit that into the tool along with any patches and the sort of basic sort of meta information. And that tool will basically build that package for you and put it into an IPS repository. And essentially, you can use your package manager to connect to a download and install the package, test it out, and then I guess it goes for review, and then eventually it'll end up into an external repository somewhere that people can use. So there's some pretty nice ways of getting involved now, and really sort of interested in trying to lower the barriers as much as possible, so you don't need to know about good stuff.
Do you need to have a ponytail like Jonathan Schwartz to be a part of the
team? Ponytail helps, yeah. I mean, it's certainly like a goatee.
Oh. Is that thing real? I mean, there's been speculation on the internet.
As real as I can guess. Seen it up close.
Have you tugged on it? I mean, really?
I was just wondering if you had a first-hand account.
No, unfortunately not. No, okay. No.
So, speaking of Mr. Schwartz, Sun and Oracle. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, Sun has been acquired by Oracle.
That's right.
Can you give us the skinny? What's going on?
I unfortunately can't. I think it's a pretty difficult situation for both sort of sides of the line, really. We're under pretty strict obligations to not discuss about it. I think if you're interested in hearing stuff like that, you're going to hear it first through Oracle. So oracle.com/sun is going to give you the sort of the skinny from that side of things. We've also got a mirror site on sun.com/oracle. And,
let me ask you this, and you may not be even able to talk to this, but let's say, doomsday scenario, Oracle says, what's this Solaris thing? We don't have anything to do with it. Has it gotten to the point now that it's enough of the community? Is it GPL?
It's self-sustaining.
Could it self-sustain?
I think there's a lot more community members getting involved now. We've got a small set of really active people. We've got a lot of people using it as well. So I think there's probably enough people involved to be able to at least keep it alive. Whether there's going to be active development to the same extent as some of the innovation that's happened previously, we'll see. I mean, obviously people sort of scratch their own itch and certainly the opportunity is there to be able to contribute. But I think, who knows, really? I think Oracle has shown a pretty strong feeling about Solaris. And
I have no reason to think that.
A lot of Oracle database systems run on Solaris. I think there's a good opportunity there. So.
Yeah, I was just more curious about the external status of Open Solaris. But certainly you're winning more people all the time with ZFS. And I think the awareness of Open Solaris has really gone up among the outside community. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really couldn't be much worse a long time ago because people were talking about Solaris 7 and Solaris 8 as being their one and only experiences with Solaris, and they'd call it Slolaris, and really a lot of those sort of things have stuck for such a long time, and people really hadn't played with Solaris 10, and certainly now really just coming back to Open Solaris and being quite surprised by how much things have progressed, really. Compiz works out of the box on Open Solaris. Things like that didn't happen a long time ago. We had, Open Windows and CDE, and it was just not a very nice environment to work on. So,
do you think that part of the reason for that is because Open Solaris has kind of been perceived by some as being all things to all people? It's something that will run on your desktop. It will be something that will run your server. Do you think that maybe that it was kind of missed the expectations as to why people had that perception?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe we could have focused on a specific area. I don't think that would have been necessarily a good thing. Some of the reason why, if Solaris 10 had only focused on the enterprise, then you sort of lose the developer mindshare. If you don't have the latest developer tools available, then, people aren't going to develop on Solaris, and then consequently, when they go to deploy on Solaris to get some of the scalability that they need for whatever they need to do, then there's a massive frustration there in porting that application across. And I think there's a quite a strong advantage in keeping that connection alive and strong and healthy and stuff. But I think. If you focus on a particular area, then you're going to get more resources pushed into that area. It's going to become a better product. But I think there's value in being that sort of one size fits all, and starting to think about Open Solaris appliances and just different things. I think that's a good thing.
It
provides more choice. More people are likely to be interested in different things and contribute back to the same sort of ecosystem, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I guess the thing is that a lot of people forget the fact that with community collaborated projects such as and big projects such as Open Solaris, it does take time to change perspective. I know other Linux distros really suffered from that, where they started out with a certain perception about them, and they find it very difficult to shake off that perception. I mean, Debian faced this for a little while as being kind of ridiculously complicated and cliquey, and Debian's not like that. It used to be a bit like that in the old days, but it's not like that anymore. So I can understand that it must be very frustrating at times in the Open Solaris camp to kind of people to still brand you with the same kind of reputation that you had 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been quite an interesting shift, actually, in perspective, is because once we open sourced the code back in 2005, no one had met each other. So we had a whole bunch of Sun engineers who knew each well, but a lot of the community members sort of didn't really know people, and it's been quite great to have a whole bunch of different community events. We've had a developer summit twice now, obviously sort of encouraging people to set up user groups and stuff like that, and really sort of seeing them meet face to face really helps. I'm sure you've seen it in Ubuntu a lot.
Absolutely.
Just some of those sort of preconceptions just sort of suddenly disappear, and people sort of get on with each other and start really caring, and this sort of family thing. It's really quite cool.
I thought everyone knew you, Glenn, because our listeners might not know this, but Glenn's nickname is the face of Sun.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that's going to change pretty soon.
The face of Oracle.
And I think Jono's moon face, so it's really kind of nice to have the sun and the moon together there.
We're doing a fair amount of shining at the moment.
Yeah, there's a lot of light in this room right now. It might be shining out of my ass right now. I don't know. But it's great to have such a charismatic front man who's helping to push forward the Open Solaris project.
Yeah, I think it's just like any other community. You need a strong set of leaders and people who are just willing to sort of laugh and joke about and really sort of create a, much like yourself, Jono, but really sort of create a good community vibe and encourage people to get involved, because the more people who sort of know you and you get known to the community, I think it really helps from a contribution point of view. You don't suddenly become this sort of nameless code reviewer. You suddenly become, that person who does X, Y, and Z. So it's a pretty good thing.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you, and I'm loving playing with Solaris, I have to say, and I'm really appreciate the work you've done and the work the team has done. Are you actively reaching out to people outside of Sun to participate? I presume you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, anyone who is vaguely interested in the technology, come on opensolaris.org, download and install Open Solaris. We're really keen to set up user groups around the world. So if you think you've got enough time to set up a user group, then that would be great. There's obviously a list of user groups out there. There may be one in your area, so encourage people to check it out and get involved.
And what we didn't mention, it's the fourth birthday of something.
Yeah, the fourth birthday of Open Solaris.
Oh, so, that's great.
So June 2005. So yeah, we just passed it this week. So
well, congratulations. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Glenn, for taking the time to join us. It must be the middle of the night. I don't even know what time it is in New Zealand.
No, it's early morning.
Early morning. Oh, all right.
9:30 and then a nice Wellington morning.
Well, so thanks for getting up early.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Glenn. Take care.
Cheers.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Glenn Foster, and he's on Twitter. I should have mentioned, but we'll give him the plug right now. Twitter.com/GlynnFoster.
Mm.
Now, did you feel a little conflict of interest talking about Solaris here, being the Ubuntu, guy?
No, there's plenty of room in the fishbowl for all of us, I think. So,
well, how would you compare? I mean, I wasn't going to ask Glenn this, but how would you compare Open Solaris to Linux?
Oh, Open Solaris sucks. <I'm
kidding. laughs> I gave you the opening there. I just wanted to give you the chance.
No, it's
there. I mean, I have to say, because of the GNU software and so forth, it feels very similar. I mean, it's got GNOME, and I mean, it feels like any Unix-y kind of OS,
I think the most wonderful thing about open source is the fact that when we kind of really first saw it with Linux and BSD, but it meant that people could build systems for different types of people, people who wanted to, who were passionate about security or networking or passionate about desktops or whatever else. And to me, having plenty of operating systems available is great. And the contribution from Sun, I think, is wonderful. It's always tempting to poke fun at Sun. But I think they've made a tremendous contribution. And Glenn, I've known Glenn for years, and he's a great guy.
Yeah,
and he's
doing a good job there. Yeah. So. Yeah, it's a good thing to have, and I'm very excited about ZFS. I think that is clearly a huge step forward in file systems. I'd love to see that on everything, but until that happens, Open Solaris has a real leg up. By supporting it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Jono, thank you for filling in. You know, this is kind of your show too. Now Randall is in, he's in the chat room saying, I can't listen, I can't watch, but I've got an IRC client open. No, I said, give me something smart to say, and he said, I've got nothing here. So lots of help from Randall Schwartz, but he's on site with a client, and every once in a while, Randall actually has to have a paying job. This isn't it. That's for sure.
Well, Randall will be back in the next episode, I believe. And on that episode, Ted Gould and John Cruz from Inkscape are going to be on the show.
Excellent. So, that should be a lot of fun.
It's going to be rock and roll. So.
And Jono's book, The Art of Community, with a foreword, or in my case, a backword by me, because I still haven't written it. Everything else is done. It's just waiting. That's coming out soon, yes? When is that going to be out?
It's looking very likely it's going to be around the 20th of August. In fact, I got the production timetable while this show was happening, so I haven't read it yet.
That's exciting.
So,
I was lucky. I got to read a galley. they still call it galleys because they don't. It used to be they'd print this out, this first edition out that you'd edit and fix, and now they just send you a PDF.
Yeah. It's all changed. You know, it's not like we print it on the press anymore.
No. Yeah, I guess not. Anyway, I got it, and I've loved it.
Oh,
of course, I've seen a lot of it on the wiki, but to see it as a book, you know, in book form, chapter form, and everything is wonderful. I think it's going to be a huge hit.
It's getting there. It's getting there slowly but surely. Can I ask one small favor, Mr. Laporte?
Certainly.
Can I make a little shout out for something? A friend of mine asked me to just announce on the show just a conference that they're putting together. It's called Atlanta Linux Fest.
Great, of course.
It's going to be on September the 19th in Atlanta, which I assume is in Georgia. I'd need to check a map.
It is.
I don't know anything outside of the great Queen's country of England. And there's going to be a ton of stuff there. There's going to be Ubuntu, Fedora, lots of talk about Blender and Sugar CRM, all of that good stuff. So my friend is Nick Alley, who's a prominent Ubuntu contributor. And unfortunately, I can't make it along, but it sounds like it's going to be a rocking show. So I just wanted to let our good listeners know about
that. It's September 19th in Atlanta, Georgia, which happens to be Software Freedom Day. I didn't even know that.
There we go.
So there you go. Celebrate software freedom. God knows we need more of it at the Atlanta Linux Fest. That's atlantalinuxfest.org. Coming up September 19th. That's a Saturday in Hotlanta. No, always glad to do that. In fact, I'd like to reach out to any open source or Linux or any free and open software developers. If you've got an event you want us to plug, we're glad to do it. Just to send an email to Randall. That's MERLYN at twit.tv. Or actually, I think he uses floss at twit.tv more. So floss at twit.tv is probably the best way to do it.
John, wonderful.
Thanks for taking some time with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks again, Leo. Take care.
See you next time on Floss Weekly.